Hello and welcome to the programme. You can visit our website anytime you like, rte.ie/Mooney. Thank you very much indeed for the lovely comments about last week's programme when we sprung into nature with contributors right around the country and further afield. We had people in Scotland, Norway and Dublin and Clare, Wicklow, you name it, they were there. And I want to thank you for listening and once again thank our contributors for creating such a vivid image of their favourite local wilderness spot within their 5 kilometre restrictions. So thank you very much indeed to all who took part in last week's programme. Something different for you this week. We do it every now and again, and we're doing it again tonight. It's a Mooney Goes Wildlife Quiz. So get a pen and paper, gather the family around the radio. No prizes for taking part, just the honour and glory of knowing that you knew the answers. Now, the last time we had a quiz, some listeners contacted me to say the questions were too hard, Derek. I kind of agree with you. I couldn't answer half of them myself. So this time I think you'll find they're a bit more balanced, okay? And again, it's only for fun and to help us all learn more about the natural world. So our regular contributors are standing by in their respective homes. Nobody's moved anywhere. And we'll go to them shortly. But I'm going to start with my own set of questions. And my theme is music from movies involving wildlife, okay? And my plan is to ask one question of my 6 before I introduce each of our other 5 contributors to ask their set of 6 questions. So, if you've got a pen and paper to hand, let's begin with my first question.
Born free, as free as the wind blows, as free as the grass grows, born free to follow your heart.
This wonderful song is from a movie starring the real-life couple Virginia McKenna and Bill Travers as Joy and George Adamson, another real-life couple who raised Elsa the lioness. Remember Elsa? And released her into the wilderness of Kenya. What I want to know is, what was the name of the movie?
Stay free, where no walls divide you. You're free as a roaring tide, so there's no need to hide. Born free.
So that's my first question. 5 more to come from me, which I will ask as I introduce each of our 5 contributors from their respective homes somewhere around the country. And we start in Malahide in North County Dublin with the good doctor himself, Richard Collins. Richard, perhaps you'll begin by telling us why you're qualified to be here and ask the questions. In other words, show us your CV on the air, so to speak.
Hello, Derek. Richard Collins here. Long-time panellist with Mooney Goes Wild. Almost a quarter of a century with Mooney Goes Wild, believe it or not. Now, I was at one time Honorary Secretary of the Irish Wildbird Conservancy, which is now Birdwatch Ireland. I also produce a weekly natural history column in the Irish Examiner. I'm known in Malahide locally as the Swan Man because I spent so many years catching, ringing and tracking mute swans in Dublin, Wicklow and Kildare.
So there your credentials, Richard. Very good. Now, can we have your questions?
Question number 1. Ireland's only toad lives in the Maharee and Castle Gregory areas of County Kerry. Can you name it? Now, Ireland has only 3 amphibian species, so this creature is rather special. Global warming is causing the ponds on which it depends to dry out, so the National Parks and Wildlife Service have organised emergency measures. Local farmers dug 1,000 ponds. 20% of them have been subsequently occupied. And Photo Wildlife Park and Dingle Aquarium have taken in distressed toadlets for for their protection. So, my question again is, Ireland's only toad lives in the Maharee and Castle Gregory areas of Kerry. Can you name it? Question number two. What Irish creature can replace its lost tail? Now, some reptiles can grow a new tail if they lose their old one. And it used to be thought in Ireland that this particular creature could leap into your mouth and breed in your tummy. Now, it was also thought that only small reptiles could replace their tail, but it was established quite recently that young American alligators can do so. The American alligator is the largest reptile able to replace a lost tail. Now, my question once again, what Irish creature can replace its lost tail? Question number three is a musical question. Have a listen to this. My question is, skylarks are singing on the wing right now. The Lark Ascending is the best known piece of which composer? Now, skylarks uniquely sing continuously, rising typically 50 metres into the air. Writing a piece of music without any pauses is a particular challenge. My question once again then is, The Lark Ascending is the best known piece of music of which composer? Question number four. Our smallest mammal makes a high-pitched squeak that only young people can hear. What is it? This creature is not only our smallest mammal, it's also our commonest. Weighing about 4 grams, it must eat every 2 hours or so, otherwise it will die. Our smallest mammal makes a high-pitched squeak that only young people can hear. What is it? Question number five. Mochtira, son of the countryside, is the Irish for a mammal that is no longer with us. The last one was killed on Mount Leinster in 1786. What was it? And finally, question six. Half the world's population of a species of goose spend the winter in Wexford. They spend the other half of the year in Greenland. The world population of the species is around 23,000, and half of them come to Ireland for the winter. What species of goose is it? And that concludes my 6 questions. We'll have the answers for you later.
Oh, I can see and hear the skylarks as they ascend in that piece of music. It truly is a beautiful piece. Anyway, we'll come back to Richard a little later on, but it's time now to continue with my second question about music from movies featuring wildlife. This song was written by Mike Batt and is performed here by Art Garfunkel in which 1978 British animated adventure drama film was it used? Have you any idea? It was the soundtrack to which movie? Come on, think now. You've all seen it. You've probably shown it to the kids, even the grandchildren.
Bright eyes, burning like fire. Bright eyes, how can you close and fail? How can the light that burns so brightly suddenly burn so pale? Bright.
Okay, let's move on to Kilrush in County Clare, where Aine Ní Leana is waiting with her set of 6 questions. You were all inspired about spring last week. Anything to add?
Yes, indeed. We had a big programme last week and we mentioned loads about spring. So I hope you have all the answers to the questions now, because as a scientist, I'm interested in the effects that spring has on wildlife and indeed on ourselves. An awakening after a long winter and a renewal of hope and life has made spring an inspiration to composers and poets alike. Now, there are 2 processes that form the essence of spring. The lengthening of the daylight as the sun comes back from shining directly over the Tropic of Capricorn, as it did on the 22nd of December, to shining directly over the equator on the 22nd of March. And that gives us days and nights of 12 hours each all over the world. And the temperatures begin to rise too. Both air, soil and eventually water temperatures rise. And heat and light affect wildlife in different ways. So if you're ready, here's question number one. Now, those were the opening bars of Vivaldi's Spring, which is part of his work, The Four Seasons. Now, we all think we know what is meant by spring, or do we? My question is, true or false? The season called spring in English is called spring because the flowers and the plants spring out of the ground at this time. And for bonus points, Derek, it has only been called spring since the 1400s. So, for bonus points, what was the name of the season in English before this? Question number two. Was the music from Stravinsky's Rite of Spring. He interpreted spring through music. But my question is, number two, what aspect of spring causes frogs and newts to awake from hibernation? And indeed, hedgehogs too, from next month. Question number three. Now that was the song of a blackbird. The males are already in full throat now in March, before there are any leaves on the trees or any caterpillars on the leaves. So the question is, what aspect of spring makes them suddenly start singing? Question number four. Was The Flight of the Bumblebee by Rimsky-Korsakov. Well, a piece of it anyway. Bumblebees are flying in our gardens already, and they seem huge. Now, why do they seem huge? Is this because A, they are all males, B, they are all queens, or C, they have their fur all fluffed up to keep themselves warm as they fly? Question number five. It's poetry this time. Well, kind of. Spring is the time when the sap rises in the trees and young men's thoughts turn to love. Well, whatever about the young men. The question is, does the sap actually rise in trees in spring? Or is it just a fanciful poetic notion? And finally, question number six. Migration happens in spring too. That was On Hearing the First Cuckoo in Spring by Delius. So the question is, what stimulates migration? How do the geese know when to go? And how can the cuckoo know in Africa when to take to the air for Ireland? And that concludes my six questions, Derek. Now I'll be hanging around waiting to give you the answers in due course if you come back to me.
Never fear, Aina, we'll be back. Like Arnold Schwarzenegger, we'll be back to you. Now, my third piece of music from movies featuring wildlife is one of those pieces of music that really does make you... Well, you'll know what I mean when you hear it.
Thank you.
what is it about some music that just puts the terrors up you? I saw that movie way back when in the Sanford Cinema in Ranelagh. It cost 50 pence to get in. That's how long ago it is. I'm sure a lot of people in the area will remember the Sanford Cinema. But boy, was I terrified to go into the sea after seeing that movie, as most people were. I mean, people were a lot more ignorant of sharks than they are today. I'm not saying that sharks aren't dangerous, but you're more likely to be hit by a bus or bitten by a dog than be eaten by a shark. That's the reality. But at any rate, I want to know who composed this piece of music. It's from the movie Jaws, obviously, but who composed it? Now, the movie's been played off the air on Film 4 for the last few weeks, so you probably saw it again recently. Who composed this piece of music? Let's move on. We go now to Greystones in County Wicklow and we say hello to Niall Hatch. Hello, Niall. Your credentials, please.
Well, Derek, I suppose my main credentials are that I'm a nature lover. I love all different types of wildlife, but birds particularly are my thing. Obviously, my day job is I work as public relations branches and development officer with Birdwatch Ireland. So there's something that's particularly close to my heart. I have to say, you know, it's been really interesting in the past year or so to see the increase in interest in birds. We've seen a big increase in Birdwatch Ireland membership, which has been fantastic. And a lot of them, I think, are looking now for the spring migrants when they're coming. So spring is a really exciting time for birds and for Birdwatch Ireland. So I hope that a lot of people will be, you know, find a new appreciation of wildlife and we get out and try and see some of these birds in their local areas over the course of the spring.
Very good. So can we have your questions, please, Niall?
Okay, so my first question, it's about spring migration. So we think of spring as being the time, obviously, when the birds are arriving into Ireland, coming up from places further south like Africa. But of course, spring migration works both ways. And as migrants are arriving, other winter visitors are leaving Ireland to return to more northerly breeding grounds. One of these breeds further north than any bird on Earth. So my first question is, what is it? What's the bird that leaves Ireland this time of year and it breeds further north than any bird on the planet? And if you want a clue, well, if you're going to look for this, I suppose you might be going on a bit of a wild goose chase. Okay, on to question number two. Which seabird, one of our very earliest spring migrants from Africa, sounds like it might be quite tasty, but it's actually named after a town in the English county of Kent? Question number three, we have a sound clip for you. I'd like you please to identify the following spring migrant bird from its song. It's one of the classic sounds heard in woodland across Ireland, and it also gives the singer its name. So what bird is this? Listen carefully. This is a migrant bird. It's a member of the warbler family. So there's a big clue. And many of them migrate to us up from the Mediterranean. Although in the last few years, more and more have actually been spending the winter here in Ireland as well. Here's another clue. The song is the best way to tell it apart from its lookalike relative, the willow warbler. So it's not a willow warbler. It's the other one that looks very similar. Okay, on to the fourth question. So when we think about bird migration, there's a particular bird I think that many people maybe associate with the arrival of warm weather more so than any other. So this common Irish spring migrant bird, which usually arrives in April, has the scientific name Hirundo rustica. I want to know if anyone could tell me what its name is in English. I'll give you a hint. It comes all the way from southern Africa. It's excellent at flying and it has a forked tail. Okay, question number five. So it's a musical question. We're going to play a piece of music for you, which I have a question about. So I want to know, what is the avian-themed title of this well-known song by Jamaican reggae legends Bob Marley and the Wailers? Don't worry about a thing. So everybody knows that song that you just heard, but do you know the title? What's that called? It's connected to the world of birds. And my last question, Derek, it's question number six. One of our very earliest spring migrants from Africa, always appearing around St. Patrick's Day, is a bird whose name in Old English translates as, if you'll forgive me here, white arse. What name do we know it better by today? So the name actually kind of does what it says on the tin. It's a very good description of the bird. But when you know the English name today, you wouldn't actually guess that. You wouldn't know the origin. It sounds more like it's connected perhaps with crops in a field. But it actually means white arse. So if your listeners aren't too offended or scandalised, Derek, they can come back to me later in the programme for the answers.
Not at all, Niall. Sure, our crowd have been around quite a while. Nothing's going to shock them. Anyway, thank you, Niall. We will come back to you later on. Now, my fourth piece of music from movies about wildlife features Elton John singing The Circle of Life for a 1994 animated movie. Do you know what it is? I don't really need to say much more than that. I think that's a fairly easy one. Now let's move on to the king of Clonsilla. You are Terry Flanagan, I hope.
Yes, Derek, I'm Terry Flanagan, all right. And apart from being the reporter on the Mooney Goes Wild programme, I'm also a secondary school teacher in Moyle Park College. And I've been there since the late 1970s. And in all that time, I've had a huge interest in wildlife and nature. And in particular, Irish wildlife and nature. And my questions, they all relate to Irish insects. Question 1. Green tiger beetles are the sprint champions of the insect world. But do they occur in Ireland? Anyone that's familiar with the green tiger beetle will know that it's a ferocious, agile predator. But do they occur in Ireland? Question 2. What are the smaller, slender versions of dragonflies called? If you take a walk along a canal on a summer's evening, you'll see these beautiful flying insects. Most of them are dragonflies, but there are smaller, slender versions. What are they called? Question 3. Listen to this piece of music.
Let's inspect an insect and see what we can see. From the dragonfly to the tiny flea.
How many pairs of jointed limbs do insects have? We're all familiar with insects, and we all know that they've two pairs of wings. But how many pairs of jointed limbs do they have? Question 4. What is cuckoo spit? Anyone out April or May will see this spit on plants. Has it anything to do with cuckoos? Or what is it? Question 5. Human lice are insects. But what about whale lice? Are they insects? We humans are familiar with these parasitic insects called human lice. They feed on the blood. But what about lice that infect whales? Are they insects? Question 6. Some insects, like aphids or greenfly, reproduce by a process called parthenogenesis. And the question is, what is parthenogenesis? I suppose a clue in the question, genesis, something to do with reproduction. But it's an unusual type of reproduction, and a very successful type. So the question is, what is parthenogenesis? So there are my 6 questions, Derek. Back to you, and I'll be with you later with the answers.
Looking forward to it, Terry. Thank you very much indeed. Now, the music you can hear is a piece of music from a movie called Jurassic Park. Do you remember Jurassic Park? Oh, I love that movie too. My nephew Sean loves it too. Hello, Sean. He can actually play it on the keyboards. The theme from Jurassic Park, composed by John Williams. But my question is, who directed the movie? This is my 5th question of 6. Who directed Jurassic Park? While you're thinking about that, let's move from Dublin 15, where Terry is, to Dublin 16. And we say hello to Jenny Brannigan. And if you're a listener to the programme, a regular listener that is, you will know that Jenny and her family took part for the first time in the Birdwatch Ireland annual Garden Bird Survey. Jenny!
That's right, Derek. And as you and your listeners know, my expertise lies in how the body moves rather than in nature and wildlife. But you're such a good influence on me that, of course, on behalf of the Mooney Goes Wild team this year, I took part in the Irish Garden Bird Survey, as you say, with my two homeschooling bird watchers. And last week we submitted our results online. We were really surprised to see, particularly after the icy weather at the end of January, that we had big groups of crows feasting and digging holes in our garden for nearly 10 days straight. It was like rook heaven. And it turned out then that groups of crows were the birds most often seen in the garden by the end of the survey. So I think we're going to have to reconfigure the garden next year for this so that we have a few areas of more shelter so the little birds will be enticed in.
Anyway, let's get on with the quiz. Can we have your questions, please, Jenny?
Absolutely. So for this spring quiz, Derek, I was inspired by our recent homeschooling efforts. And of course, Jamie and Holly have had loads of projects to do while they've been at home. So some of our quiz questions are based on the interesting facts that we've all learned along the way. So here we go. Question one. Dandelions close their flowers in the rain. True or false? And again for you, dandelions close their flowers in the rain. True or false? Moving on now to question two. This was one of the projects that we had to work on for school. So again, question two. What animal was domesticated by the Incas more than 3,000 years ago and is now a household pet? Question three. What is the largest land mammal on the planet? And the clue is, it has a big trunk. Next question. Really, this could be an audio one, actually. So I think you'll all hear this in your head as soon as I ask it.
Let's start at the very beginning. A very good place to start. When you read, you begin with
A, B, C.
When you sing, you begin with Do, Re, Mi.
Do, Re, Mi.
Do, Re, Mi. The first three notes just happen to be Do, Re, Mi.
Do, Re, Mi.
Do, Re, Mi, Fa, Sol, La, Ti.
What kind of animal is a doe? So from a really famous movie that we all love, what kind of animal is a doe? I mentioned this a little bit earlier, so you might have picked up the answer. Murder is the collective noun for a group of which bird? So again, we saw a lot of this in our garden during the Irish Garden Bird Survey. Murder is the collective noun for a group of which bird? And finally, question six. And I like this one. What bird cannot move their eyeballs? These birds can rotate their heads up to 270 degrees, which is really amazing range of motion. And again, I'm fascinated by this because I think about how much range of motion we have in our necks. But what bird cannot move their eyeballs?
So, a needle pulling thread. La,
a note to follow, so.
Tea, a drink of jam and bread. That will bring us back to... Oh, no, we don't want to tell you. No, we don't.
It couldn't be simpler. Anyway, we leave Jenny there. We'll come back to Jenny later on. And here now comes my sixth and final question. Music from movies that feature wildlife. Here it is.
Look for the bare necessities. Simple bare necessities. Forget about your worries and your strife. I mean the bare necessities. Mother Nature's recipe. Bring the bare necessities of life.
I want to know the name of the singer. It's from the Jungle Book. You all know that. Bare necessities. Who's singing?
I couldn't be founder of my big home. The bees are buzzing in the tree to make some honey just for me. You look under the rocks and plants and take a glance at the fancy ants, then maybe try a few. The bare necessities of life will come to you. Look for bare.
And that concludes our six rounds of questions. We'll come back with the answers later on. But right now, I want to talk to Niall Hatch about various things. So, Niall, put your Birdwatch Ireland hat on you, but I suppose I've got to refer back to Jenny's last question. I'm sure you know the answer to that one, do you not?
I do indeed. It's a bird that I'm very fond of, but I'm not going to breathe a word. I'm not ruining this quiz for anybody.
Come on, Niall. And the one before it about collective nouns. You had a wonderful article last December about collective nouns for wild birds.
Yes, on the Birdwatch Ireland website, this proved to be very popular indeed. You know, a lot of people contact us asking us, what's the collective name for this, that and the other? And when it comes to birds, of course, if you're stuck and you don't know, you can get away with just saying flock, because that covers them all. But it is nice if you do know some of the more detailed ones. So one of my favourites is a charm of goldfinches. That's one that always resonated with me. And an exaltation of larks. There's also a banditry of titmice. So that'll be the blue tits and the great tits and so on. And that really does capture how they go about, you know, in that kind of cheeky way, maybe trying to steal some food. I really like that. A scold of jays is another one. A parcel of linnets. A something of crows. I'm not going to blow that one for anybody. A bellowing of bullfinches. Of course, probably the most famous of all, it's become really into the lexicon now, is a murmuration of starlings. So we think of the starling murmurations as being that big magical display that they put on. But actually, technically, a murmuration just means a flock of starlings. Even if they're just sitting still or perched in the trees, that's still technically a murmuration. You have a quarrel of sparrows. So if you've ever seen a flock of sparrows, they are all jostling for position and trying to fight over the food. So quarrel is a very good word for those. A parliament of rooks. So that does sort of, I suppose, describe the way that they seem to pontificate and strut about the place. A gift of robins. And then you have a gift of robins. Maybe that's something to do with Christmas. I don't know, but that's what they call them. And then you have a herd, both for wrens and for swans. So from a very small bird to a very large bird, but still a herd of them. And a lot of these names, too, they date quite far back. So the origins of a lot of these is in the 15th century in England. Some authors wrote them down, decided that they wanted to sort of codify these and to get some of these folk usages. To be honest, I think a lot of them may have been a little bit contrived. I think they've been put together for the sake of poetry and for literature. But so what? I think anything that makes our language richer and helps people to celebrate and enjoy the natural world in a new way is a really good thing. So it's something I think I'd like to see people using more, rather than just saying a group of or a flock of. Let's talk about having a nigh of pheasants or a tiding of magpies or a clattering of jackdaws or even a mutation of thrushes. I don't know where that one would have come from, but a mutation of thrushes it is.
But you haven't mentioned the unkindness of ravens, Niall.
Oh, yes. I think that with a lot of these names, you can tell maybe there's a little bit of a bias going on when they were deciding these. So some of them are very positive. So with the goldfinches, as I said, that's a charm. But then you have the unkindness of ravens. You have another negative word for the crows. I'm not going to blow the answer to Jenny's question there. But again, it's very, very negative. And so I think it does kind of show maybe the attitude that people have or had towards these species. You know, I think we're projecting our own sort of views on them there and our own emotions. So, yeah, they are a bit subjective, I think.
Unkindness of ravens. I really don't like that one. I bet that comes from Old English, actually, because aren't there ravens still in the Tower of London? And they say when the ravens leave the Tower of London, the monarchy falls or something like that.
Yep, that's right. And so I think there was consternation there a few months ago when one of the ravens did indeed disappear. So I think that if it falls below a certain number, I think that, the crown may fall. Who knows? I'm not very interested in the British royal family, I have to say, but maybe they're sweating it now. Maybe there is an omen there. But I do think that ravens certainly were very much associated with bad luck and with misfortune over the years, because they were very much associated with battlefields. So where there was battles, especially in medieval times, and horrifically there would have been dead bodies strewn all over the fields, the ravens would have gathered to come and feed on the corpses. Horrible though that sounds, that's what they would do. They're opportunist feeders. They would have probably been more common back in those times than they are today. They're making a bit of a comeback here in Ireland. They're doing quite well, but the numbers wouldn't be like they were going back several centuries. And they would have been seen as ill omens because they were associated with death, with battle, with war. And there's even talk that they were attracted into the sounds of cannons firing and the sight of plumes of smoke rising up over fields. They're very, very intelligent birds indeed, and they learn to associate this with death and destruction and therefore an easy meal. But they're also very captivating birds. I know that the author Charles Dickens was very, very fond of ravens. He kept pet ravens throughout his life. He was just amazed by how intelligent and how playful they were. When they're trained, they can be taught to speak if they're raised in captivity, in the same way that a parrot can. And some people even claim, because they're so intelligent, you can even have some rudimentary conversations with them. They seem in some ways, or some people claim at least, that they actually understand some of the things that they're saying. So really a very interesting bird, a very powerful bird, and a very intelligent bird. So I think just calling it unkind and an unkindness of ravens, it kind of does them a disservice. It doesn't really show the fully rounded nature of their character, I think.
Jenny also mentioned the fact that she had made her returns with regards to the number of birds that she spotted and the actual variety of species in her garden. She was taking part in the Birdwatch Ireland annual garden bird survey for the first time. Has everybody got to return their results now?
Yes, we're asking people who've taken part in the survey to return the results to us by the end of March, if at all possible, because the sooner we get that data in, the sooner we can start checking it and analysing it and working out the trends and the patterns. And given the huge increase in interest in wildlife, and particularly in birds, that Ireland has experienced over the past year, we're optimistic that this may well be our best and biggest survey ever. So we have an even bigger job for ourselves to try and analyse all that data. So the sooner people can get it into us, the better. So what you can do is, if you've been keeping your records for the Irish Garden Bird Survey on paper, you can just send them back to us at Birdwatch Ireland on the address that's mentioned on the form there. Or if you prefer, you can enter them online. If you go to birdwatchireland.ie and look for Garden Bird Survey there, you'll find a link where you can just enter all of that data straight away into the online form. And then the added benefit of that is then that we don't have to transcribe it at the other end. So it goes straight into the database from there. And also there's a section there, if anyone has any questions or any queries about how it works, you can contact us. There's a link on the website there. We'll answer all those queries. And if in doubt, if you're not sure if you've got the right data or whatever, check with us and then we'll make sure that it's all good and proper. And then hopefully I'll be able to tell you down the line, Derek, how we got on this past winter, how the birds are doing, because I think it's been a very unusual winter for them, a lot less human activity than they normally would experience. And also coming off the back of a breeding season where humans were largely absent from many places that they normally would be. So we're predicting that perhaps numbers of young birds will have increased. Some of our more vulnerable species may have had a chance to bounce back. But again, I'm speculating there. And the fact, the reason why we do this survey is to get cold, hard science. The data tells us the truth. So that everybody who's taking part in this survey is what we call a citizen scientist. And that's what I really love about birds and bird watching and ornithology. It's one of the areas in science where the interested amateur often has a bigger role to play than the professional scientist or biologist, because there's just so many more people out there now interested in birds, observing them, building up their bird watching skills and submitting the data to them. And I'd also say, if you've been bitten by the bird survey bug, Birdwatch Ireland has other surveys we run throughout the year. So people can volunteer to go count birds for us at different sites. They can take part in groups counting wetland birds. There's all sorts of things. We do surveys of swifts and kingfishers. So if you've been bitten by the bug, please do get in touch and we can put you in touch with the organisers of the other surveys.
Speaking of other surveys, Niall, Spring Alive is with us again.
Spring Alive is one of my pet projects, Derek. I'm really, really fond of it. I'm on the international steering committee of it, and because it's an international project, it's run by BirdLife International partners across, I think it's 50 countries now, and not just here in Ireland or in Europe, but across Central Asia and Africa as well. And what we ask people to do is we want to report the first of the common migrants that they see returning back to their own countries. So I'm really proud of the fact that over the last 10 years or so, Ireland has consistently placed number one per capita in terms of the number of records being submitted. So I think that a lot of people out there do like the idea of citizen science and reporting their data. So we're asking for the people's first sightings of swifts, swallows, cuckoos, sand martins, and then also if they see ringed plovers nesting on their beaches. This is a little wading bird, a very pretty little thing with black and white pattern on its head, and they're often found on shingle beaches. You can find full details of all of this at springalive.net. You can see pictures of those birds there too. And just to say, it's also a wonderful project for kids and for families, and the website has been designed very much with children in mind. So there's lots of games and activities they can play there. There's a real cartoonish kind of vibe to it. And there's also a lot of conservation activities that the families can do together, helping birds in their neighbourhood. There's a special conservation theme we run as part of it every year. And this year it's all about nesting birds, how to make sure that birds can nest safely without being disturbed, without having their habitat destroyed. It's all about raising awareness, really, through migratory birds, because these birds are travelling huge distances to come to us here in Ireland. They go through all sorts of trials and tribulations that we couldn't even imagine. And then it's just tragic if they arrive back here and all of a sudden their nesting area is destroyed or you know, they can't breed after all that effort. So that's really the ethos behind Spring Alive. So we're hoping lots of people will get involved, report their sightings at springalive.net and learn all about these wonderful, wonderful birds.
Okay, more details on the website, rte.ie/Mooney. Now, Niall, while I have you there, we might as well ask you to give the answers to your questions. Do you have them?
I do. And I hope people weren't too scandalized by any of the questions. So question number one. So I was talking about spring migration, and I mentioned that this, of course, is the time when birds are both arriving in Ireland, but also leaving Ireland. So I wanted to know which winter visitor that's leaving Ireland around now to go to more northerly breeding grounds breeds actually further north than any bird on Earth. And the answer to that is the Brent goose. So that species winters mainly on the east coast of Ireland, but it breeds in high Arctic Canada, in places like Baffin Island, really, really very far north, where there aren't very many predators, and there's a nice long summer. But of course, in the winter, the weather gets very tough and very dark there, so they have to come to Ireland. And of course, if you've been listening to the programme for the last 2 weeks, you would have known that answer, because we've been talking about Brent geese quite a bit. And they're one of my favourite birds as well. I know that both Richard Collins and Eric Dempsey feel the same way. So on to the answer to question number two. So I asked you which one of our very earliest spring migrants from Africa, which happens to be a seabird, sounds like it might be quite tasty, but it's actually named after a town in the English county of Kent. And that, of course, was the Sandwich Tern, which was named after the town of Sandwich. And, of course, it was the Earl of Sandwich who gave his name to the food that we know today as the sandwich. So that's the origin of that. So it's nothing to do with food. It's to do with a town in Kent. Okay, question number three. We played you a clip. It was of a bird song, a very distinctive one, and wanted to know what it was. So we'll play that clip for you again, just so you hear it one more time. And the bird there is saying its name. That's the chiff-chaff. It sings chiff-chaff-chaff, chiff-chaff-chaff, chiff, like that. And that's the best way to tell it apart from the lookalike willow warbler. The two birds look extremely similar. They're very closely related, but their songs are utterly different. So that's the best way to identify them. Question number four. Which common Irish spring migrant has the scientific name Hirundo rustica? So suppose when you hear rustica, it makes you think of maybe the countryside, maybe farmland, rural environments, and that would be quite appropriate because that's the scientific name of the swallow. Sometimes called the barn swallow because they often nest inside farm buildings. So Hirundo rustica is the barn swallow. Question number five was our musical question. So we played you a piece of music by reggae legends Bob Marley and the Wailers and asked you if you knew the name. It's strange, not a lot of people know the name of this song. They think it's called, like, Don't Worry or something like that. It's actually called Three Little Birds.
Don't worry about a thing.
That's actually from Bob Marley and the Wailers' 1977 album Exodus, which, fiddly enough, is actually another term for migration. My final question, question number six, was I mentioned that one of our very earliest spring migrants from Africa, which appears around St. Patrick's Day each year, is a bird whose name in Old English translates as white arse. Sorry to say that again. What name do we know about it by today? Well, that is the wheat ear. So its name has nothing to do with wheat or with ears. It's a reference to the fact that it has a big bright white patch on its lower back. And when you see this bird, which is about the size of a robin, in the same family as well, when they fly away from you, you often see this white patch on the back. So that's what's very striking about them. So if you remember white arse, you'll be able to identify the wheat ear. And that concludes my questions and answers there, Derek. I hope people enjoyed them. I hope people got at least a few of them right. So back to you.
Sure they did, Niall. Thank you very much indeed. Let's go to Aina next. Aina, can I have your answers, please?
Right, the questions, answers. The answer to question number one. I was wanting to know, was the season called spring because the plants and flowers spring out of the ground at this time? And this is actually true. This is why it was called spring in English. And for bonus points, I wanted to know, what was it called before spring? And the name of the season in English, before the 1800s, was actually called Lent. The Lenten season, because the days were lengthening at this time. So now, question number two. I wanted to know what aspect of spring causes frogs and newts to awake from hibernation, and indeed hedgehogs too, next month. And the answer is, in this case, it's the rising temperature. So if we get a false early spring, things might waken up before there's enough food to maintain them, which would be terrible altogether. Question number three. I wanted to know what aspect of spring made the blackbirds and the other birds suddenly start singing. The answer is light. The increasing intensity and length of daylight stimulates the pineal gland and it releases melatonin, which kickstarts the reproductive urge. Well, in birds at least, anyway. Question number four. It was about bumblebees and I wanted to know, the ones that are flying in our gardens at the moment, why do they seem so huge? Was it because they were all males? Or B, they were all queens? Or C, they have their fur all fluffed up to keep themselves warm as they fly? And of course, the answer is they are all queens, as only queen bumblebees hibernate. And each and every one of them must start a new colony in spring. So they're very important. Leave the dandelions out for them. Question number 5. Does the sap actually rise in trees in spring, or is it just a fanciful notion? And the answer is true, it does rise in trees in spring, most famously in the Canadian maple trees, where the sap, the maple syrup, is harvested at this time by driving a spike connected to a tube into its trunk. And my final question, question number 6, was about migration. I wanted to know what stimulates migration. How do the geese know when to go? And how can the cuckoo know in Africa when to take to the air for Ireland? And the answer is, again, light. The return of the sun. Which is why rapid global warming can really upset this, as the spring temperatures change as the world warms up, but the light intensity and the day length is always the same year on year. So we could be heading for a mismatch. So that's it. That's my 6 questions. So back to you, Derek, in the studio.
Thank you very much indeed, Aina. And for Terry Flanagan's answers now, we go back to Dublin 15. Terry.
Yes, Derek. Question 1. Green tiger beetles are the sprint champions of the insect world. But do they occur in Ireland? And the answer is, yes, they do. And if you've ever seen one, you'll never forget it, with that dazzling metallic green colour. So, green tiger beetles do occur in Ireland. Question 2. What are the smaller, slender versions of dragonflies called? And the answer is, damselflies. Just as pretty, only smaller. Question 3. How many pairs of jointed limbs do insects have? Now, some people might think this was a kind of a trick question, because if you answered 6, you are wrong. The answer is 3, because we asked for how many pairs of jointed limbs. So there are 3 pairs. Question 4. What is cuckoo spit? Well, it's not the spit from a cuckoo, which is the obvious answer. It's the froth surrounding an insect called a froghopper in its nymphal stage. Question 5. Human lice are insects, but what about whale lice? Are they insects? And the answer is no. They're crustaceans. They may be related to insects, but they're definitely not insects. And whales can have as many as 7,000 of these lice on their body. Question 6. Some insects like aphids or greenfly reproduce by a process called parthenogenesis. And the question was, what is parthenogenesis? And the answer is most commonly called virgin birth. It's when the eggs develop into embryos without being fertilized by a male. So the greenfly can come along, the female that is, she can lay eggs that are unfertilized and they'll hatch and they'll grow into baby greenfly. So Derek, there are the answers to my 6 questions. It's back to you in studio.
Thanks, Terry. Now let's go to Dublin 16 to Jenny Brannigan. Jenny, can we have your answers, please?
Derek, so the first question was dandelions close their flowers in the rain. True or false? What do you think about that, Derek?
Well, I think the answer is true.
The answer is true. That's absolutely true. Now, so question 2. What animal was domesticated by the Incas more than 3,000 years ago and is now a household pet? And the answer, of course, is the guinea pig. Isn't that amazing? Question 3. I think my clue definitely will have worked for everybody here. What is the largest land mammal on the planet? And the answer, of course, is the African elephant. Now, our next question then was, what kind of animal is a doe? And again, I think you will all know the answer to this. Anybody who has watched The Sound of Music will be singing that song in their head. And the answer, of course, is a deer. Doe, a deer, a female deer. So a nice easy one for you there. Murder is the collective noun for a group of which bird? And I had hinted a little about this when we were talking about the groups of crows that we were seeing in our garden during the survey. So the answer, of course, is that a murder is a collective noun for a group of crows. And our last question, what bird cannot move their eyeballs? They have amazing neck movement, but they cannot move their eyeballs. Of course, it is an owl.
Fantastic, Jenny. Thank you very much indeed. Talk to you soon.
See you, Derek. Take care.
Thanks, Jenny. Now let's go to Richard Collins in Malahide. Can I have your answers, please, Richard?
Hello, Derek. My first question was, Ireland's only toad lives in the Mahari and Castle Gregory areas of Kerry. can you name it? It is, of course, the Natterjack Toad. Question two, what Irish creature can replace its tail? And the answer is, of course, the common or viviparous lizard. Question three, The Lark Ascending is the best known piece of which composer? And the answer is Ralph Vaughan Williams. Number four, our smallest mammal makes a high-pitched squeak that only very young people can hear. What is it? And it is, of course, the pygmy shrew. Question number five, Mochtira, son of the countryside, is the Irish for which extinct mammal? And it is, of course, or was, of course, the wolf. And number six, half the world's population of a species of goose spend the winter in Wexford. And the goose is, of course, the Greenland white-fronted goose. So well done to everyone who took part in the quiz, and it's back to you now, Derek.
So now it only falls to me to give you the answers to my questions. And remember, my theme was music from movies that feature wildlife. So question number one, the answer is Born Free. I mean, how could you get it wrong? Matt Munro was singing it all the way through as I was asking the question. Born free as the wind blows. Grass grows, born free, born free. Born, he kept singing Born Free. So Born Free was the answer. So mark one up if you got that right. Question number two. Which movie featured the song Bright Eyes, sung by Art Garfunkel? And the answer is Watership Down. Do you remember that one? I do. I bet you do too. Question number three. Who composed the theme music to the movie Jaws? And the answer is John Williams. You knew that one too. Let's move on. Question number four. Elton John performed the song The Circle of Life for which movie? The answer is The Lion King. Question number five. Who directed the movie Jurassic Park? Steven Spielberg is the answer. And my final question, number six. Name the person singing Bare Necessities from the movie The Jungle Book. And the answer is Louis B. Armstrong. If you got that right, and you got more of them right, well, congratulations. If you didn't, it was all about the fun and enjoyment of taking part. Anyway, thank you very much indeed to all of my contributors, to Jenny Brannigan, Aina Nilana, Niall Hatch, Richard Collins and Terry Flanagan, my broadcast coordinator, Jarlath Holland, our researcher, John Bell O'Reilly, and we want to say goodbye to one of our producers, Sheila O'Callaghan, who has been working with us for the past few years and who moves on to bigger and better things from today. So Sheila, good luck to you. That's all we have time for today. Visit our website anytime you like, rte.ie/Mooney. Until next week, goodbye.
Mooney Goes Wild was presented and produced by Derek Mooney.